Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Carulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
What's up? Wake up, Hollywood!
Wake up.
Dimitri Cerny, all the way from Victoria, British Columbia.
Here I am.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
You got out of the snow and
I
into
made
the
it.
Rain. How
I
was
made
that?
It.
How was that little transition?
It was good. I prefer snow over rain, but...
You get to ski? You should probably be able to ski outside your
They
boat.
Have a mountain there, yeah. But,
just
I mean...
One?
I think two. They got two mountains on the island there.
Those are called boots.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure.
And you're a big skier, aren't you?
I am a skier, yeah.
How long have you been skiing?
I've been skiing since I was like four, I think.
So you mean you went through the neon ski outfits? You had
That's
you
right.
Had, I know you I'm had like sure. some pretty electric
a neon onesie, yeah.
I started skiing then, so
okay.
I definitely had neon green and neon yellow.
I don't know if I got green. I think it was like...
I had all the colors. We had
I
orange.
I think maybe I had neon pink.
Did you have the overalls? Did you do like...
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that was clutch.
Yeah, that's...
And everybody that had those thought they were badass.
And moon boots. Did you ever have the moon boots?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Yeah,
but you know what I think is crazy? A lot of skiers now... look like snowboarders.
That's yeah
so
that's,
true
that's
and that's
true.
Not cool,
well,
because
the snowboarders are like the cool thing, right?
Yeah,
that's why people who used to ski started snowboarding. And I'm assuming you're
yes,
a snowboarder.
I made that transition.
You made that transition.
Well, you know what, it's like I love skiing,
right?
It was really fun. But I would watch snowboarders going down the mountain and be like,
I want to be
God, that looks so cool. And I wasn't like, I was good enough to ski and get what I wanted out of skiing.
Yeah,
but I was at the point where it's like, if I take the time, I can look that cool coming down the mountain. So I definitely made the transition.
So,
but I know
so
a lot
you
of
look cool now when you get down
I love
the mountain.
It. I love it. And right you know on. What? It's like, there's nothing. It is. I mean, once you do both.
Right.
I see that there's. It's not even a comparison to
Do
me.
Girls look at you differently
oh, of course,
when you're snowboarding?
Of course.
Oh, damn.
Dude, you don't see many chocolate chips flying down the mountain, man.
Right
no,
on.
It's just. You know what I like about it? It does. It's like. It feels like you're surfing a frozen wave.
Yeah.
And I like the sensation of heading down with one side, you know, rather than just like. You know, heading down. Okay, I got my poles, and here I go. You know, but the one thing, when you're learning how to snowboard, there's a moment where you're like, we could sure use a pole right now.
Like, see, that's when I quit and went back to skiing after I tried.
Because you're dependent. You're dependent on the pole.
Right.
Not good. But you know what? I think you should rock those neon colors again.
May you think it's time
I
for a comeback?
I think it doesn't matter if it comes back or not. I think it's time.
I think it'd be a hard time fitting into one of those now after all this time.
Yeah, I definitely had some really... I mean... Now when I go back, it like burns my retinas when I see how loud the colors are. Because they were crazy.
I wonder if there were less accidents back then.
Because
you
everybody.
Could see everybody, right?
I mean, it just looked like a bunch of glow sticks going down the mountain. So I'm sure people could see.
You could ski at night.
Yeah,
no
that's
problem.
True. That's true. But yeah. Now it's like I see a skier dressed like a snowboarder. I'm like, it's not fair.
You're
I mean,
stealing
come on,
my
where,
style.
Where are your bibs, dude? Come on. Where are your neon colors? Come on. You know?
Yeah. Love.
But I haven't gone snowboarding this season. Have you gone skiing?
No,
this
I haven't. I haven't, and okay. I should.
I
need it. I need
We're getting
the exercise.
So much snow now.
Yeah, yeah. Have you been to Big Bear at all?
I haven't.
Didn't even make the trip, eh?
Not yet.
I'm using A now because I'm living in Canada.
I know, but you're here for the Grammys. You excited
I'm,
for Grammy
oh,
week?
I'm super excited.
We
for
picked
it.
Up our tickets today.
Whoa, yeah.
Your first time
that
popping
was.
Your cherry.
Yeah, the Grammy cherry.
Yeah, the Grammy cherry. It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be very exciting. Who do you look forward to most?
I actually want to see I do want to see Bruno Mars again. Yeah. He's like one of the performers I'm excited to see. I do want to hear Beyonce in the room because I've never heard that. I'm down to see Metallica because they're Metallica, and I saw them once, and I wasn't like, oh my God, this is the greatest heavy metal band of all time, but I'd like to see them again. But I want to hear Adele again, just doing one performance.
So you saw her at the Staples Center?
I saw her at the Staples Center.
What did she do, six, amazing. Seven shows?
It was amazing. She did nine or
nine
ten.
Shows?
Wow, she has the record, amazing. And I'm so glad she dethroned Taylor Swift, because Taylor Swift had the record for six.
Wow.
And she could have done 20.
Wow.
She could have done 25, 30, right. Honestly. Because people just wanted those tickets, and it was an experience.
And her last Grammy performance, the microphone dropped in the piano,
so
right?
That's so that's why I'm excited to hear.
You think it's for her, it's a bit of a, like, oh, I'm going to redeem myself, and she's definitely. Just going
to... I mean, that's the crazy thing about the Grammys. It's like, you have one song to throw down.
Right.
And, like, the funny thing is, I always, like, usually open NK Band shows with, like, a 5 to 8 minute song, you know, for the first song in an NK Band set. So it's just, like, we get warm. Mm-hmm. We get... used to, like, whatever sound is going on. Like, you kind of have to adjust.
Right.
But with something like the Grammys, you have 3 minutes. You have to go in and... I mean, it's kind of like playing the Apollo Theater or, like, doing an open mic or something where it's... You don't know what's going to happen, and that's all the time you have.
And I'm sure rehearsal is going to be completely different from once the room is full and butterflies are flying. And
I'm actually also excited. You know, Dimitri and I worked on a song for Ziggy Marley's record, and... the record's up for a Grammy. I have never seen the first ceremony.
Right, because it's not televised.
Yeah. So I've never been to it, because usually what they used to do is you had to buy tickets to each one.
Oh, wow.
And I think a lot of people were pissed because nobody was going to the first one. Come on, we got Grammys! So they actually did something cool where they combined both of them. But the only problem with that is it's like what was a 3-hour experience is now an 8-hour experience.
Wow.
So... yeah, it's gonna be kind of crazy.
Well, it's good to have a break in the middle, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely
a small,
needed.
Short, little...
sushi break.
Yeah, sushi break. And then it's like, you know, it's cool that it's also two different theaters.
Right.
And, yeah, it's going to be exciting. Yeah. Who are you most excited to see?
I think...
You haven't seen any of the performers.
I haven't seen any. I mean, really, it's like you said, I mean, all of them. I mean, how can you pick one of them? It's like going to the Hall of Fame and...
yeah.
You know, getting everything in one night. I mean,
and the funny thing is, like, the American Music Awards, it's not the same for me. The Country Music Awards, not the same.
Well, the Grammys seem to be the most prestigious out of all.
They
of
are,
those,
and
right? Like the Oscars are the music, and everything else is kind of like, you know,
second rate.
Yeah, like the Emmys and you know,
ooh, you got a lot of Emmy haters right now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, but it's gonna be cool to see. I mean, John Legend's one of the performers. You haven't seen him?
Oh, he is?
Yeah, he performs.
Wow!
So it's going to be John Legend, like, Bruno Mars.
Box of chocolate.
Beyonce, I think,
I don't
is
know
performing.
What I'm going to get.
Carrie Underwood's performing. Metallica's performing.
Right.
Ziggy's performing in the first part of the ceremony. So
it's going to be great.
It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little uncomfortable dressed up. I hate dress clothes.
Yeah. We're wearing a tux, aren't we?
Yeah. I wish I could get my blue ruffled tuxedo.
I wish that too.
You know what? I almost was like, you know what? I should wear blue ruffled tuxedo just to be sitting next to Dimitri and just embarrass the shit out of him. It's going to be cool.
That wouldn't be bad.
And my folks are going too, though.
Yeah.
I took my mom once.
Yeah, but, that's right. So when you went to the Grammys last... well, how many years ago
was
that, first of all?
8 years.
8 years.
Nine years.
And who was, like, the big standout performance that
I mean,
time?
Lady Gaga was one person that I remember because she
was. Was that the one time she was, like, in an egg? Was that the one time?
Or? No, it was. She was in this, like, huge industrial type of, fireworks and all kinds of stuff going on. It was awesome. Dave Matthews also performed. He was up for You and Me Together, that track. Who else? Lady Antebellum.
Mm-hmm.
That was the surprise when they had that big country song that Need You Tonight, maybe is what it's called. I can't remember the name of it. But anyways, that was the first time I'd ever heard it.
Right.
And it blew my mind. That was the breakout performance for me, even though they were like already pretty big by then. But hearing that song live, it was like, oh my God, this is a great song. And then it just went bonkers as far as, you know.
Who was hosting?
I think LL Cool J was the host.
Yeah, he did it for a few years. I wonder why they changed, right?
I'm glad they changed. Yeah. I mean, he was good. He was a good host, but it's cool that James Corden, he's kind of like the new hip talk show host.
Yeah.
And I think it's great to have comedians doing that stuff.
Right.
Because it just like gives them an opportunity to make people laugh and like, you know, have a vehicle to kind of
entertain. You
know, yeah, entertain. Yeah, it's like old school.
That's right.
Yeah. All yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, anyways, it looks like our special guest has arrived. Mr. Ben Wilkins. Cool as a cat. And you're also from Canada.
I am.
Oh, I didn't know that, Ben.
Look at this.
Fellow Canadian here.
Ben's going to switch seats.
We're invading.
Yeah, Ben, you're from Toronto, right?
Well, I was born in Toronto.
Okay.
I grew up in London, Ontario, which is a city about 300,000 people between Detroit and Toronto geographically.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I moved to Montreal when I was 18.
Wow. That's a hip city.
It is. Very hip.
I went there when I was like 3 years old, and I only have like little glimpses of it.
Right.
But my brother went back recently, like about 6 months ago, and he was like, man, the food, the people, the vibe is just off the chain.
It's a party island. Yeah, it's a lot of stuff going on there.
And when was the last time you went back home?
I go home a couple times a year. So
you're like, I miss the gold. I miss the Putin. Putin.
I had a couple shows back in Canada in the summer, and then I went back during the holidays, the winter holidays, to see my folks.
So Ben and I have been working on music together. He's also one of the engineers at the school I've been teaching at.
Awesome.
And we just kind of crossed paths. Great cat. And he was telling me these crazy stories that I just want to talk about. Like, he used to tour with an upright piano. Like, wow. He would cart an upright piano on the road. And like, I want to just talk about that first because it's such an interesting story. Yeah, right. And talk about like meeting the piano movers and like learning. You got to talk about that.
Just yeah, so that. It was a thing where the feel, the sound, different sound systems you're going direct in with a keyboard. It's just not the same thing. It's not the same feeling. You don't have the same kind of harmonic. Yeah. Harmonic relationships than playing an actual organic piece of wood, you know, that vibrates with all the imperfections and such. So we tried to mostly play venues that had pianos, but then at a certain point there was a whole tour coming up and we're like, okay, how can we make this work? So I bought a piano. There was an upright piano. It was about 4x4x2, so kind of manageable. It could fit in a Ford Econoline, for example. And I just wanted to
not in my Ford Econoline. If you showed up to my gig, I'd be like, yo, whoa, what is this? What are you doing with this?
Yeah, it definitely added a level of seriousness, you know, just especially when we hit some of those festival outdoor stages where getting onto the platform, there's a tiny little narrow staircase, and we got to go up there and then do a 90-degree turn with this piano on a skid. So I walked in to this piano moving company and I said, look, guys, I can't hire you every time. I got a whole bunch of shows going up, like. What can I do? I'm going to buy your equipment and please teach me how to do this. And they were super helpful. So, yeah, once you get a skid, which is like a sled and some straps and some proper moving blankets.
And you can do it.
And a good dolly with good wheels.
So when can you move my piano? You're like, wait a minute.
I left that stuff back in Canada.
I'll get the gear. You know this. No, I'm just kidding. No, I mean, it's great. It's so ambitious. It's like, and you know what? When he told me that, I was like, I like this kid.
Yeah.
This kid's like my stuff. Because I feel the same way about keyboards. Like, I've never liked them. I recently bought a Nord only because I heard some of the piano sounds. And I'm like, okay, this is the closest to a keyboard piano sound that actually sounds legit. And my keyboardist in my band, he was like, dude, Nords are the best. And he'd show me all the little hoops and whistles and bells and all about it. And I was like, okay, this I get. But I still feel the same way about my upright. Like you feel about a real piano.
It's interesting you say that about Nord, though. I mean, I think Nord does great stuff, but a lot of pianists, you know, hardcore pianists, high-level jazz pianists and stuff, there's a huge kind of debate. A lot of them don't like the pianos under Nord. They'll be like the Korg Triton, man. Yeah, exactly.
But the Korg is so heavy, it's just gnarly. It's a gnarly, gnarly, gnarly keyboard.
It's a serious business, you know?
But you know what? What a serious business is hauling an upright to every gig.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how was your band when they were like, they must have been like, I got my own gear and I got to haul this piano.
Well, I got to say, it was pretty much always hilarious. There was some complaining along the way, but we all helped each other move all of our gear. You know, a lot of bands, it's like the guitar player, the singer just shows up with a mic or, you know, their axe and a cable and they're done. And meanwhile, the drummer is like, after the gig, grumbling and carrying around his big heavy bag of all the hardware and stuff. Whereas we would just do it. It was almost like by the time my drummer gets back down the stairs, he's gonna watch me going up the stairs with the hardware bag, and it's gonna be like cosmic high five, bro. Like, we're gonna do this.
The funny thing is, I have a saxophonist in my band, and I also have a harmonica player. And my harmonica player, he's always like, dude, I'm down to help. I'll help you with merch. I'll help you with amps. I'll help you with hardware. Whatever. But the saxophonists are always like, usually like, oh man, I gotta like check out my reeds. So before they start with the reeds, I'm like, yo, you're gonna help with this. Hey, help Adam with this. Help so and so with this. You know, it's so funny. It's like I just start delegating before anybody can give me an excuse.
Yeah,
that's the only way.
That's,
it's like
that's good.
Jazz
yeah.
musicians, they're tough.
That's
they're
what a
tough.
Band leader is
you
for,
gotta
right?
You gotta crack the whip. You gotta crack the whip. You know what I'm saying? I have one over here. There we go. Oh yeah. Oh. But anyways, so what got you into music? Let's talk about a little bit. Let's go way back. What got you into music? What was the one thing or song that you just you heard it and you were like, this changed my trajectory?
Yes, I mean, I grew up with music in the house. It was kind of a this, you know, a conscious decision on my mother's part. She was like, I want music in the house all the time. I want my kids to play music. I want that to be a big thing. I don't think she thought I would take it that seriously and go right into it, you know. But I was taking piano lessons as a kid, and there was always music playing.
You start with classical? I'm sure you started.
Yeah, classical, but we were always listening to Beatles records, and I mean that was a big one. We had a turntable, and my parents had a bunch of old vinyls that you know I would just put on in my own time after school and stuff. And so music was always a big deal. I also grew up. My father's an evangelical minister, so I did spend a lot of time.
I didn't
in
know
church.
That. That's mm-hmm. crazy.
Yeah. yeah. So crazy. Yeah, there was, you know, church with music. Couple times Halo appeared.
I always just like, hey dad. Or is every answer he just like, you know, son. Sorry, I had to.
No, so that was it. I mean, there was always music around. I was really into it. I was singing a lot as a kid and then playing music, and then, you know, as soon as I learned to play guitar, which freed me up a little bit from the classical piano paradigm, I started writing songs.
Was there a band or musician that made you want to learn the guitar, or just that just a natural progression for you?
It was just kind of, I think it was just kind of in me, you know?
Yeah.
There was always bands that I would discover and really mm-hmm. like and really get into. In high school, there was a pretty awesome indie music scene that was coming out of Halifax. Mm-hmm. Really,
dude, I lived there.
You lived in Halifax?
I lived in Halifax.
I didn't know that.
Nova Scotia.
No way.
Swear to God, and I was around 3 years old, 3 to 5 years old, 4 and a half, 3 to 4 and a half. That's when I lived in Halifax.
Wow,
isn't that crazy?
Yeah. So much.
It's not when somebody like,
technically he's
up,
a
like,
Canadian too. I don't yeah. know if you knew
yeah.
this.
Yeah, I was born in St. John's, Newfoundland. I'm a Newfie.
No way.
Well, I'm for real, but yes, yes, it's
Newfies
true.
Are the most loved Canadians
that's,
and I the know. Happiest.
Yeah, I know, and we are also the most made fun of too. That's why I got to be a good heckler when I get up there.
We kid because we love.
We kid because we love. I like that. So you were playing guitar.
There was this indie band from Halifax.
Yeah.
Well, there's a bunch of indie bands from Halifax.
Okay.
So Sloan was a big one. That they kind of like really kind of broadened, like woke everybody up to the scene that was there, you know. And
isn't Great Big Sea like a huge band
yeah,
from there?
They're from out there as well, and that's that they're a little they sound their sound is a little more traditional, you know.
Okay.
A lot of
mm-hmm.
harmonies and stuff, whereas Sloan kind of did this what I grew up calling indie rock, which is different than sort of like was that second, you know, Broken Social Scene, Arcade Fire wave that happened a little bit after. This was sort of indie rock, was like guys singing a little bit too hard, the drummer playing maybe a little bit too loud. You know,
right?
Like
it's got edge.
Yeah, it's just and very sort of interesting song structures that there's sort of a reason why it had to be indie. Like they can't put that on the radio because that's a weird chord.
You know what though? I hate that. Like radio is supposed to show and challenge the listener, and it used to be like a little bit like that.
Yeah.
And now it's not. I mean, Sirius. I find more of that in Sirius.
Mm-hmm.
With Sirius Radio, then I find it with terrestrial.
Well, yeah, KCRW, you know. It's,
yeah, but even that's
DJs,
not pushing the envelope like it used to. It used to push the envelope, but it's not now to me.
You don't think? I think anytime you have DJs able to spin their own music, then you have that opportunity. It's just amazing.
But that's
how
the thing; they're
radio,
not. That's they're most not, DJs no. are not. That's the thing; they're not tastemakers. Whereas, like, I think there was a time between the 50s and I would. Say the 80s, like the 50s to the 80s, there were tastemaker DJs that you would listen to them because of their taste in music.
Wasn't there a whole, I remember reading about this, but I'm a little hazy on the specifics. There was a corporate takeover of all terrestrial radio in
right.
America
yeah.
in the 90s, right?
Yeah,
clear and now channel. It's basically everything's decided by the focus group.
Yeah, and before that they bribed them, right, with cash.
Yeah,
well, but you know what?
Their record companies, yeah, exactly.
But see, the thing is, at least they bribed the tastemakers.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, at least there were tastemakers that would play something. I mean, and they would even if they took a bribe, they would be like, I ain't going to play this. They would say that. Right. There are people that are just like, this is not going to fit. I'll play it once. Right. And they'll take the money and play it once, and that was it. But when somebody was a tastemaker, they would they'd play the Ray Charles. They'd play the Stevie Wonders. They'd play the Beatles. They'd play those artists that people just didn't hear. And the Beatles were not supposed to really kind of happen in a way. Like, it was almost an accident how they played. They got played in America. Mm-hmm. And they got so many calls in that one experience. They were played 10 o'clock at night. They got so many calls. That's what started the whole,
British invasion.
Crazy. But enough about the Beatles. They've got enough success. We're talking about Ben Wilkins. So you got into this indie band, Sloan. You got into all these...
I wasn't into the band, Sloan. No,
no, but I mean, you were influenced.
Into it. When I was 16 years old, drinking age in Ontario is 19. Mm-hmm. So you can't really go to a club unless you're 19. Sometimes they'd have all ages shows, which is cool, or there's all the kids under 19 had to have X's on their hands. And that was a big scene. But there was a 19 plus show that I went to, that I wanted to go to. But it was 19 plus. There's no way I could get in there, except that it was a restaurant. So I went early and literally brought a book and hid in the bathroom stall for 3 hours.
Wow.
And then I was in.
Well, that's...
And then it was the epic moment where I'm 16, I'm in the front row, I'm getting soaked with beer.
That's amazing.
And I'm watching my favorite band. Oh, it was great.
What a story.
That's crazy. I mean, honestly, that's commitment.
Yeah.
And actually,
music makes you commit like that. Isn't it crazy?
It is crazy.
It shouldn't be like that.
I met Jay Ferguson, who's one of the songwriters in that band. Mm-hmm. And I got his email, and he was super interested in, corresponding with me. And then not only did he put me on the guest list for just about every show from then on, he also just gave me notes on songwriting. So I would send him songs I was writing or working on. He gave me advice, and
that's amazing.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah, kudos to him. And most people don't take the time to do that.
Oh yeah, it was great.
It's because he's Canadian. He's just so nice, That's why. No, so you were in high school. Did you start a band in high school?
I did. Yeah.
And what instrument did you play when you were in your band?
Whole movement.
I played guitar, and I sang. I played some trumpet as well.
Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. There was two main songwriters in that band. Mm-hmm. It was me and a friend of mine, Stacey O'Bally.
And would you guys sit together and write the songs together, or would you kind of take turns?
We pretty much write it at home, mm-hmm. and then bring it in and then sort of rehearse it as a band.
Wow.
And
cool.
Come with different parts.
How did you do a lot of covers?
No covers.
None?
Oh, I think we did Say It Ain't So.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That's one of my favorite Weezer songs and records.
Yeah.
They call that the blue record, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. The blue record.
It's a classic, dude.
It is. Sure.
See, I missed that whole wave of high school angst, let's get a band together and do that. And I would look at bands in my high school and be envious. Oh my God, they're in a band. This is so cool. But I would just be like, yeah, they're all right. What do you guys think?
Were the opera singer, right?
I was the opera singer. Yeah. I was doing so much classical music. Yeah. And I was doing jazz choir. So when you saw a rock band, it was like, those guys are badass,
Yeah.
Did you play high school lunches and stuff like that?
We did, yeah. My high school had lots of cool stuff like that. We had this thing called Lunchapalooza, where all these bands would audition, and then
the students would go
and they pay $2 and they get to see all these bands on their lunch period. Yeah, but there was also a lot of clubs we could play at. There was all ages clubs that would have us on. So a lot of
Canada,
times,
man, seriously.
A lot of times we'd be performing, and there'd be it was a lot of punk bands at the time as well, and we were kind of into this East Coast. Lots of vocal harmonies, lots of kind of major sounding
and trumpet solos. You're rock it out. You're like, wait, guys, trumpet solo. Did you have another horn in the band?
No. I mean, that was mostly just for recordings and stuff. I was playing trumpet in high school. So.
I mean, that's an instrument that's amazing. That's probably the toughest instrument I think of any horn to sound good on.
I think probably French horn is more difficult. The mouthpiece is even smaller.
Well,
and you're playing.
You have me there. I was like, So you got way into playing in a band, and then you graduated from school, and then what was the path for you?
I was into acting and performing as well. So I was trying to decide whether or not to go into theater more seriously or to go into music. And music won by a long shot. So I auditioned for a bunch of universities, and I got into McGill, which was my first choice, and then I canceled the other auditions. And at 18, I packed up and moved to Montreal.
That's amazing.
Isn't it crazy? It's kind of like music chooses you.
Yeah.
That's how I feel even getting into those programs. It's I kind of didn't really want to go that route. I didn't think it was a viable, a serious I didn't think it was an academic way to go about college.
Right.
And as soon as I realized that, oh, you could study music, I don't have to take like biology or chemistry, which is what I was applying to a lot of schools for. It's like, it's amazing. You realize you're listening to music in a different way than other people. And that's how my experience was. I didn't realize that everybody listens in a different way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you don't hear things the way the next guy hears. I always thought everybody can see and hear the same. And it's like, I've learned senses. Everybody has, like, a little bit more of a sense of something than something, you know,
right.
Somebody
yeah,
else.
Absolutely. I remember noticing that when I would listen with you know, people in a car or something who weren't musicians and weren't breaking down music the way I would naturally do it. I'd say something like, oh, don't you love that bass line? And they'd be like, what are you talking about?
What's
the bass line? And they'd be like,
and you must have been like, I see that look in your face. You're like, this motherfucker don't know.
Sometimes, yeah. And then sometimes realizing a person is not really differentiating that sound.
Right.
It's all kind of one beautiful thing. And I'm kind of envious of that in some ways. Like, mm-hmm. to be able to hear just
I am, and I'm not
wrong.
At all. It's like it's like having the blinders on.
You can't go back, yeah.
But it's like once you start learning how to hear,
yeah,
it's like you just go down the rabbit hole, and it's just like one rabbit hole after the next.
Oh, yeah.
And you just learn, like, oh my God, this is never going to be like the way I want it to be, but I'm going to just always try.
Right,
you know?
For sure. And there's always, you can always listen more, and there's always more to love in there.
So did you record your first record when you were in high school?
I did.
How old were you? 16?
16, yeah.
That's crazy.
Where did
yeah,
you guys
played on CBC Radio too?
Wow,
that's amazing.
That's a big deal. Wow, especially for Canada. You don't know this.
But it's yeah, you said it went over my head. I was like, CBC Radio. But you know what? I don't know Canadian radio.
That's like NPR. It was like a nationwide show.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So where did you guys record this first record?
It was our high school music teacher was very patient with us, mm-hmm. and very supportive, and. We started working on it while the school year was on, and then as we started to hit summer break, the drummer in the band, Brennan, just said, "Hey, can we borrow this like 16 channel recording? Like,
wow.
Wow.
Hey, can we use this?
Yeah, good. So yeah, we just worked as much as we could. You know, some of us had little summer jobs and stuff like that, and we would just rendezvous afterwards and work till late at night. And
amazing.
But there's something romantic and just like. Punk rock about that too.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you're working overtime to make that thing happen.
We're recording it with borrowed gear in a friend's basement.
That's always that's
how magic happens.
That's
right?
How magic happens.
Yeah.
Let's play something first. I mean, this is not off the record that you did when you were 16. I'm a little disappointed, but tell us a little bit about the record. One of the songs you're going to play off this record right now.
What's cute?
So we got Day to Day feat. Bonnie Point, right?
Bonnie Pointer, yeah.
Pointer. Sorry,
yeah, Bonnie Pointer. That's my girl.
Yeah, this is a fun track. This is on the last record, the most recent record called All From Hello, which I recorded in Montreal in Pierre Marchand's studio. And I wrote this track, and this track is kind of about I just kind of had a falling out with a really good friend, and it was kind of just I was just sort of dealing with that kind of pain and that kind of. Realization that sometimes things in life just change and they just don't really go the way exactly you know you see them going and that there's sometimes not a whole lot you can do about it. And then I reflected, you know, I was thinking about all this and it actually made me appreciate the friends that I still had in my life even more. So I wrote this song and it was a little bit inspired by Bonnie Pointer's track Free Me From My Freedom, which has a banjo solo and Eddie Hazel plays bass and banjo, and it's kind of got this sort of funky country kind of vibe going on. So after recording the song, I thought, you know what, I should see. It would be so cool if someone like Bonnie Pointer would be able to sing the second verse on this thing. So I contacted her manager, and her manager was super cool, and she just said, I said, hey, was there any way Miss Pointer would even consider recording on
And she's one of the Pointer sisters.
Wow.
Yeah, one of the founding members of the Pointer sisters. So she,
like legendary, iconic soul right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So her manager got back and said, we're sending over the track, big boy. We'll see if you like it. And
you must have been like, shit.
And she did. And so then we hooked up in New York City and recorded in the Lower East Side. And we actually had a show in Montreal the night before. And the guy made the record with Pascal Chefdeschi, who works at Pierre Marchand Studio Montreal.
Is everybody French in Montreal? Like, everybody has a French name all the time?
Like, pretty much. Yeah. There's a lot of French people up there. We ended up driving all night to New York to be able to make the section the next day.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, it was great.
That's nuts.
So this track
awesome,
is
awesome, but you're excited. You're like, dude, this is crazy. Yeah. And then when it happens, you're driving all the way home like, dude, that was crazy.
Can you believe that just happened? Yeah, what did we do? That was awesome. So badass. Yeah.
All right, so what are we playing first?
Let's play that one.
Day to Day.
All right, here it comes.
Awesome.
And you know, I saw the video. You showed me the video like last week, I think.
Yeah.
And there's like a roller skater grooving. I'm just
There's a video. Where can we find this video? Yeah. If I want to watch this video,
go to YouTube and you can type in Ben Wilkins, and it will come
up. Spell it. Spell it, because people are dumb.
B E N his first name.
He's talking about me, by the way.
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't. I'm talking about people all over.
W-I-L-K-I-N-S. And the song's called Day to Day.
Look it up. Because it's a funky video.
That was
too.
Awesome. And great harmonies, great vocals. She's in the video.
Yeah, she's in the video.
So did you guys shoot the video when you recorded, or was it at a later date?
I hit up a manager again and said, hey, we're going to release this track. We're going to film a guerrilla-style video in North Hollywood.
Wow.
Is Miss Pointer available and interested? And she showed up with all these costumes. And
she flew from New York? Or where's she?
She lives in L.A.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was great.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
When I get home, I'm going to watch that video.
You'll love it. Yeah. That's what made me love the song. He was showing it to me, and I was like, that's dope.
That's a great
track. I mean,
track.
Just like, you can't not like roller skating in a music video.
Right.
It's always just a good feeling.
Yeah.
It's like, man, 70s, funky.
Yeah, it definitely has that feeling, yeah.
And you know what? What's interesting about you, Ben, you actually have your finger on the pulse on a lot of 70s records like that I haven't heard. Like, you showed me that Aretha Franklin Spain.
Mr. Spain.
That's a crazy track.
Crazy cut,
I never heard that record.
Recorded in Muscle Shoals, produced by Quincy Jones. Yeah, there's some Aretha Franklin records that I guess, I don't know, they just maybe didn't get made into CDs right away because they maybe just didn't sell as well, but there's some that are just so good.
So funky.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were listening to Chaka Khan doing We Can Work It Out, too. It's like, that's such a funky, funky track.
Yeah.
Greg Feelingains, man. He was Michael Jackson's keyboardist, the Jacksons' keyboardist. He's just such a bad mother. Anyways, Ben, what was the inspiration behind that song?
Well, that the vocal and the, I had the piano bit first. A lot of the times I'll get sort of a little bit kind of riff or sort of like. So I had this chord progression that I was sitting on for a long time, but I didn't do it. I didn't break it out like that. It was just block chords. So first, for a while, I just had this dun 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. And as soon as I kind of just got it into that flow with that riff to sort of break it up and kind of snake my way through it with the bass line just being consistent, the chorus just kind of came, and
it's so funky, it just feels good. Like, I like when a track just, it's like, this feels good.
Thanks,
it's like,
makes you nod your head.
Yeah. And it just, but it's like,
automatic, and then it's
BPM
your shoulder
too. That's what I like. It's like, right. It's like, oh yeah, this is cool, this is funky, it's mellow, it's like, it drives, but it grooves, and it also is mellow at the same
time. Yeah, it's patient.
Yeah.
There's, we also made this record kind of like a 70s record. I mean, the piano, bass, and drums were all recorded live off the floor, and we rehearsed like crazy beforehand. You know, it was minimum 3 times a week. Running the songs a bunch of times.
See, we see how to run a band. I like it. I like it.
So then when we went in, it was really like, we wanted to record the stuff, and we didn't have to do very many takes of each song. Like, our day in the studio was like, okay, let's get the drum sound for 5 hours.
Right.
And then once the drums are tuned and everything's set, it's like, okay, cool, bass, you sound good, right? Yeah, that's the same thing. Here we go. And then
I always feel like a bass player in a session is just like, looking at the drummer like, seriously, dude. Whereas, like, the bass just, like, plugs in and his mic, and it's like, I'm ready. You know, the bass player's always sitting there looking at the drummer like, dude, you're such a diva, dude. Seriously? It takes you 5 hours to get a tom sound?
Yeah, I know. Like, the bass player has brings all these books and he's studying and learns a couple languages.
It's kind of true. It's like their bass player is usually, like, he's, like, the gatherer of the band. Like, always gathering information that's outside of music while there's music stuff to be done. Every gig I've ever done, the bass player is set up first, and he always disappears when there's stuff needed to be done, and then they stroll in last right before the call time. You're laughing because you know that that's very true.
I also have a funny story. The bass player that played on this, his name is Alex Lefebvre, and he's just a great guy with a very extreme self-deprecating kind of humor, you know? So he'll just... He's great. So while we were recording this, at one point he arrived, and his girlfriend, he told me, he's like, last night I got home and my girlfriend was like, hey, how did it go? And he said, like, oh, it's going great, we're banging these songs out and sounding really good. And he said that she said to him, it must be harder for the other guys because they have to play real instruments.
That's bad.
And he's like, that's bad. What my girlfriend said to me.
Are they married now? Are they still together?
They're divorced. Sorry, I didn't mean to hit the monkey. Yeah. Bubbles!
What were you? What did you mean to play?
I didn't mean to spank the monkeys. I didn't mean to do that. Happened again. All right, so you were, you know, coming up with the instrumentation of that song. What made you throw a banjo all that?
Well, that was pretty much directly inspired from Bonnie Pointer's track "For Me, For My Freedom," which has Eddie Hazel playing this crazy banjo solo in the middle of a funk track, and I just thought that's super cool. I had that riff, and then I thought let's get a banjo solo on here. So that little trade between the banjo and the synthesizer, the synth is an ARP Odyssey. I had a really great relationship with the local repair shop where basically I just gave them like a flat rate, and anytime I wanted to, I could just pop in and take whatever synths I wanted.
Wow.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. We had some fun stuff to play with.
I recorded a banjo on my record from 2012, and I remember the experience was like, it didn't matter where the mic was. It was always going to sound like a loud, ridiculous, big, in-your-face banjo. And even in mixing it, it was like, hey, let's bring down the banjo. Let's bring down no matter if it was like barely audible or if it was like doing something really, it was always very present. It's like one of those instruments that you cannot hide. It's kind of like an accordion. It cuts through no matter what. And it's mostly single note. Sometimes there's chords and stuff, but that is one of those instruments that is really hard to tame in a mix.
Yeah.
But you did it great. Like that, most people don't understand like how difficult that is to do, especially in a song like that, to make it sound so smooth, like it fits.
Well, I gotta say, you know? Mixing and sonic credit all goes to Pascal Chefdeschi.
Dude, I need to learn these names, man.
Paco.fm. You can check
I'm just
them
picturing
out.
The all these guys are making crepes after your sessions, dude. Le crepe! I'm just kidding. All right, so you did, when did you do that record?
We recorded that, when was that exactly? That was 2013. That we tracked most of that, and then it took a little bit longer to get finished. Wow.
And when you write, are you thinking more about tracking piano, tracking guitar? What's your main instrument that you like to write on?
It depends. I do write on guitar sometimes, although most of the time it's piano. And sometimes, you know, you're just out, you don't have an instrument, and something comes in your head, so you sing it into your phone, and then you get home.
I always find, like, I switch back and forth, and it's like, things will sound unbelievable on guitar, and it won't sound that way on piano. And things will sound unbelievable on piano, and it won't sound that way on guitar. It's like they're very separate channels for me. It's like sometimes I'll learn something on guitar or play it on guitar, and I have to like relearn it to play it on piano, just to like, even though I know the chords, but it's just like a different, to make it sound as cool on one instrument or the other, there's always like this relearning phase for me. So when I write, I don't know if you're like that, but it's interesting that you say that you write on both, because not many people always have that avenue, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I try to not have it be like a regular thing. I try to have it be like each time I approach a song, I just kind of let it kind of come into existence however it kind of wants to. Otherwise, I feel like, you know, if I try to take too much conscious control of the process, then it ends up kind of sounding similar a lot of the time, you know, whereas for me to sort of discover something,
make it new
that I like, or that really kind of wants to get out, a lot of the times it's making choices that are a little riskier, or maybe something that I didn't think that, you know, would work initially.
You know, I ask this question in every show because I'm always intrigued by what inspires an artist, who inspires an artist, but who are your biggest influences? I know there's a lot of 70s influences, but just rattle off a bunch of them.
Sure. So, I mean, I go through phases. I was a music major in college, too, right? So there's times where I would just listen to jazz, and then there's times when I was just into, like, you know, early 70s songwriters like Joni Mitchell, Carole King, James Taylor, Carly Simon, that crew. And then I'd get into, you know, more of some Motown stuff or Muscle Shoals stuff that was going on. A lot of the times now I'll just get into a producer, and I'll just try to listen to everything that they worked on, so... Nile Rodgers was someone I was listening to a lot during while we were making this record, and just kind of like getting into the head of another artist and seeing how they approach different things and how they work in different circumstances.
I wish there was like a 10-hour. I always think about this whenever I think about a record. I wish there was a 10-hour documentary on Thriller, because so much happened in that record.
Yeah,
so many different styles were accomplished and done in such a fantastic way, and so many of the best players in every genre we're playing on that record.
Yeah.
And it's like this perfect piece of work that can never be replicated again. I don't even think Michael even had the foresight to videotape it because he just wanted to. I mean, there are clips, but not like a documentary. But when you say to get in the head of an artist, you and I were talking about Michael Jackson. That's what we were vibing on, old Michael Jackson stuff. And that's a record that I always think about and something I always go back to and reference.
Yeah.
What are some records that you go back and reference as a producer or...
Oh, I mean, there's records writer. That I will never get tired of whatsoever. So that track, Mr. Spain, is a cutoff of Hey No Hey, Other Side of the Sky by Aretha Franklin. And I'll never get tired of that record.
Right.
I know it. I've been playing the grooves out of that record for ages. And
stealing.
It's always
stealing
feels
it.
Good every time I put it on, you know? Yeah, Off the Wall is a huge one.
That's an unbelievable. I mean, it's yeah. and it's like it didn't win that many Grammys, which is crazy to me.
Right.
That's one thing when I see the Grammys, as much as it is exciting, it's Grammy week this week, I'm always thinking about those records. I'm like, what album fell through the cracks?
Well, it's amazing how it can stand the test of time. I mean, you have all this, you know, advancements in audio technology, and you'll play this on a good sound system next to something that's done today, and it sounds
and
better, or can hold. Yeah, it still kills. Yeah.
And The Weeknd, for example, is like top of the charts right now. Every song of his, it sounds like a Michael Jackson B-side.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's what makes them so great. That's what makes people still, there's still a sound in that that people still want. But when you put on Michael's old stuff, and in comparison to somebody like The Weeknd, it's just, it's mind-blowing how different it is as far as the production and the, you know, like, presentation of the idea.
They were making records differently back then,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
There's rhythm sections working it out in a room together. People really, like, feeling it all together.
All right. Let's play another track from your record. What are you going to play us next?
Let's do, we have time for two more?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's do Through to You. This is off my first record.
Okay.
This was probably the first single I released in Canada, and it did fairly well on radio.
All right.
And what else can I say about it? Yeah, well, there's a music video that goes along with it where I'm playing piano in a cafe in Mile End, Montreal, which is in a particular cafe that has 7 hours of live music a day.
Wow.
It's where
that's
people just
awesome.
Go, like, you get a residency, your name's
that's
up
awesome.
On the board.
Wow.
And then people just go in there, and you kind of don't need to worry about who's there or if anyone's listening. You kind of just work out your own thing, but... You work out a lot of performance chops. Also,
right.
Playing in an environment where you're singing your heart out,
yeah.
And people
don't care.
They don't care, man. One time, I turned around and I think about half of the room was babies.
Wow.
You're like, seriously? You're like, I am influencing an entire generation. All right, let's play your track.
Hey, here's Through to You.
Solitude, nothing to resembles a room full of familiar faces. Do you see what we're doing? Do you know that we're gonna get through to you?
Orchestrations, horn parts.
Amazing.
Yeah, thank you.
A festival of music going on in each track. I love it.
Yeah.
And you love those slow tempos. I love that.
Yeah, you gotta hang back sometimes.
Yeah, you're just like, I'm gonna make this groove so hard that you just gotta hang back. Where can people find you?
On my website, benwilkinsmusic.com.
Spell it out because people are dumb.
BenWilkinsMusic.com.
I'm surprised, you know, Ben Wilkins is not a very, you know, it's not an uncommon name, but it's not a common name. And I'm surprised that you got that website. When did you get that website? Because I got Nikhil Karula, and I had somebody come after me like, Nikhil, I got Nikhil.com. I'm sorry.
Somebody has BenWilkins.com. I don't know who they are. We've
who
tried
do we them. Have to beat up? No, no, it's crazy that you got that. You're lucky you got that.
Sure, sure.
I always feel like when you get the .nets, you're like, ooh, you got the .net. Huh?
Well, you could have gotten .ca maybe, right? Since you're from Canada.
Could have.
But .com, it is.
.com.
It shows the ambition. I'm going international.
Yeah. I'm global. Yeah. Well, I want to get to, we're going to play one last song. Why don't you talk a little bit about this song that we're going to play out so we can get all your songs in, because I want everybody to hear
this
your music.
This song is called A Whisper. It's off my last record called All From Hello. Both records you can download, pay what you want. You can download them all for free on my website, CD quality or high quality MP3. Yeah, that's about all I need to say, I think.
You're a better man than me, man. Well, Ben, you've been an awesome guest.
Well, thank you.
We're going to have you back.
I would love that.
About 10 months, maybe?
Sure.
You're going to have to do another record. You're like, shit. We're going to play this next song. What's it called one more time?
A Whisper.
A Whisper.
A Whisper.
A Whisper.
Yeah, here it comes.
Oh,
listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.